Tonight, we have a special after-hours interview with Kyle Branch. He's LA's professional and private bartender to the stars, a mixologist who's created over 60 signature cocktails, resident bartender at the Gardenia Supper Club, and now the author of Life Behind Bars, Vignettes Over Cocktails. You are a Hollywood bartender, to be sure, and you have been in the movies. And appropriately for Halloween, you've played a dead bartender.
Yeah.
Tell us about Clive, bartender for the dead.
I'll tell you about that. I moved to LA in 85. In 86 and 87, I was in acting scene study classes. So I was in acting classes with Studio DeFazio Workshop at the time. And I love acting, but I don't pursue it on a regular basis because I just don't want to be a starving actor in Hollywood, one of those types, because it's like winning the lottery, getting a part. It's a lot of tough competition. But I've always kept myself open to it. And in the last few years, I've played little parts in some short films, and I've got a good friend of mine who's a short film director and a writer as well. I played a character called Clive the Bartender from the Dead about 4 years ago in a movie called The Hounds of Bakersfield. It's like a short film, probably 16, 18, 20 minutes, something like that. And in fact, I remember shooting it. We shot that one scene of my Clive scene in a garage in a house with a huge green screen in back. Because you can do that. If you know how to do it, you can do it really well. And we shot that about a week before I took off for my journalist mixologist press trip to Cognac, France, for about 4 or 5 days. But I also played two characters in that movie, The Hounds of Bakersfield. I played the drummer in the band, so nobody that had seen the short film knew that I was playing two characters because they look so different. With Clive the Bartender from the Dead, I had white-faced, you know, kind of pale, slick hair all the way back, nice and short, and I played the real professional. It was just a fun scene to do. We had a good time doing it. I love playing that old classic type of bartender look, bartender from the dead, and it disappears after I speak to one of the band members. But it was great putting the wig on to be a long-haired drummer in the band, too. So that was fun, you know. I love playing small little parts like that. I love just kind of doing the acting thing.
What fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Have you worked any private homes that you thought might be haunted?
Yeah, you know, I've worked a property three different times now for a catering service. I've worked two weddings and then one party there. Hardly anybody knows about it. It's the Highland Taffy Estate, and it's located on Highland Ave, about two blocks down from the Hollywood Bowl. There's the old American Legion on the right side, but there's this long, thin driveway, gated driveway, and you go all the way up to it, and that is the Highland Taffy Estate. It's completely hidden. It's not directly on the street of Highland, and nobody knows that it's there. And I've worked there a few different times, and it was the first property that William Randolph Hearst ever owned in the state of California.
Wow.
Because it's where he used to hide his mistress, Marion Davies. And there's two homes built on the property. A little bit of a distance from each other because the property was never leveled off. It's like built all the way up from a mountainside. And that's why they have weddings. They have this little small custom built-in amphitheater up at the top that they have wedding ceremonies at. And then they come down to the rest of the sprawling property for everybody to spread out and have a good time with event and music and all sorts of things. They have sculpture studios on the property now. So they have students come up during the week. And there's teachers there and, you know, artists there, and that's how they utilize the property. But the homes are the original homes that were built there, and it's just a beautiful property. But you do get the feeling, after a while, that you've been there on the property, and you're walking through some dark areas of it at night. There's a sense that it's almost like it chills on your shoulders when you're walking around a little bit.
So there's a kind of a ghostly presence.
I would say there's a potential of that for sure, especially because it was Hearst's first property. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got the big castle way up north. But, you know, this is back in the Hollywood days. I mean, this is 100 years ago, and that's old for Los Angeles.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, or America, for that matter. I mean, maybe not as old as a lot of properties back east in the eastern seaboard. But out here it is, because when you consider Mulholland built the Owens Valley Project to bring water to Los Angeles, that project was like a 6 or 7 year period from like 1902 to 1908 or something like that. That was the turn of the century. That is how Los Angeles got to be the size of it is today, because they had to bring water to it. Otherwise, there wasn't enough underground water in the valley to take care of a growing population, because back then, say in 1904, San Francisco was like 3 or 4 times the size of LA. Now it's kind of reverse. But, you know, thanks to that happening. But then shortly after that, 1910, 1920, 1930, the movies and everything was built up around her to what it is today.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the history of L.A., it's very fascinating history as far as its entertainment field and how it got to be the size that it was. I mean, the Department of Water and Power is what William Mulholland eventually became in charge of.
Well, that was Chinatown.
Yeah.
The movie Chinatown. Mrs. Mulray was Mrs. Mulholland.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, the Owens Valley water scandal.
Yeah, in fact, the granddaughter donated a lot of the Mulholland belongings, the artifacts or artwork and stuff, or museum pieces to Cal State Northridge.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure that's where it went. But it just goes back. It's a huge history with there, and without that, L.A. wouldn't be what it is today.
Have you worked in any of the speakeasy rooms around Hollywood?
No, I haven't. I've been at the Gardenia for so long, and I've been working privately with all these other events. I can't remember if there's a door knock situation with a code that I've had to get in the back of, but I know that there's a couple of them around in LA because it kind of started up in the last 5 years or so because of all the craft cocktail and mixology that's going on. There's a lot of great craft cocktail bars out there in LA now, probably a good 25 or 30 of them. Which is good. It's probably the right amount to kind of spread out through Los Angeles. And in fact, there's one out here that Marcos Teo works at, the 1886 at the Raymond. It's like a restaurant with a bar in back.
Oh, the Raymond's beautiful.
Yeah, so go and speak to Marcos Teo sometime if you're over there, because he's part of the craft cocktail movement. As one bar out here in the Pasadena area. But in Los Angeles and downtown, you know, there's the Doheny and there's so many of them, I just forget, but I have the whole listing of them on my website. And there's plenty of them in L.A. and the Santa Monica area, too. I wish there was a few more out in the valley, but hopefully that'll grow out there sometime soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love cocktails. I created a cocktail this year called Cool Water with cucumber vodka. That was was fun, and muddled orange and some orange bitters. And it's like a spring-summer cocktail. Little dashes of tonic water, lemonade, and cranberry juice with a garnish of lime on top. And just, it's not a huge craft cocktail depth, you know, with all the different types of bitters and infusing and stuff going on. But it's fairly quick for me to make behind the bar. And sometimes you have to keep that in mind when you're working a full service and high volume operation.
Well, it sounds delicious.
It's very good. I tell you what, it took off. It got kind of popular this year, so I'm happy. And I was able to make it at some private parties, so I winged it out. And I took it out of the Gardenia for some parties as well as some other. I create cocktails on the fly, too. You know, even at private parties, I kind of use what I have. You know, I let them know, the clients. I send them an email Word doc with a complete full and dry wet stock beverage list that they use as a checkoff list. So they really appreciate that, because sometimes they can go to the store and go, God, what do I get for a party?
Yeah.
Like 50 people or 100 people or 30 or 80 or whatever. I mean, I've worked parties, obviously, from the Grammy party of that big, gigantic one, 1,200. But then I've also worked the Giant Village parties downtown when they were going on. And that was the largest outdoor over 21 New Year's Eve event in the country. It was like 12,000 people there.
Do you ever get somebody at the bar who wants to tell you how to mix it?
Sometimes there's people that, if they question your experience, they can, or if there's certain little particulars that they like about having a cocktail their way, they'll do that. And I've got no problem. I'm an open door. I'll make it any way the customer wants, because that's just the nature of what we should be doing as professional bartenders, not playing this snobbery side. You know, craft mixology in the last 10 years has kind of gotten a little bit of a rap about, you know, because they can be picky. You know, they won't make Long Island iced teas anymore or something like that from the past. But in a sense, a Long Island iced tea is kind of it's a fun classic cocktail from the 80s and 90s. I mean, the 80s and 90s were like a fun cocktail period, not a serious cocktail period like the late 90s and 2000s and now is. And before the 80s and 90s, there was the kind of a classic cocktail with, Freddy Fudd-Puckers at the Gardenia, because we have Old Hollywood, I still make sidecars, old fashions, Manhattans, Gibsons. I've been making those the whole time that I've been there. And some people think the classic cocktails are forgotten. They've never been forgotten. They're just in few and far between places where older generation people hang out that remember those drinks from way back then.
So what's next for Kyle Branch?
Book 2's coming out. The book 2 in the series of Life Behind Bars is probably going to be a series of 3 books and a total of probably about 75 stories. Book two will be out, I'd say, at sometime in the first quarter of next year. I've also written a treatment for a one-hour dramatic television series based on the book, Life Behind Bars, of
terrific.
Which it'll be the title. I've got the outlines for all the 13 episodes for season one finished. So when you put together what they call a Bible mm-hmm. for a television show, there's a lot to do. I have some writers involved along with myself. So those two things are happening, and I just continue to do what I do and enjoy it. You know, I love private bartending and getting a lot of on-call events because I'll work out in Malibu right off the beach. It's anywhere. I mean, I'm everywhere in Los Angeles, and that's a big place to be.
If one of our listeners would like to book you, how can they do that?
They can go to my website, which is kylescocktailhotel.com. My email is on there. They can email me at kbranche@earthlink.net, K-B-R-A-N-C-H-E, and just make contact with me through there, and I'll just get back with them as soon as possible.
Great. Well, thank you again.
You're very welcome. It's great to speak about, you know, my book, and thank you for having me on for that.